Okay, so get this. Picture New York City in 1911.
All right.
But instead of those charming horse-drawn carriages, we've got two trucks in a full-on race down a packed water street.
It's a scene that feels ripped from an early action film, but for Luis de Cunha Carvalho,
Oh, wow.
it ended in tragedy.
Yeah.
In this case, De Carvalho v. Brunner, it isn't just some historical curiosity.
Right.
It actually grapples with a legal principle that still impacts us today:
Okay.
joint liability.
Joint
Being
liability.
fair.
So, like, if you're a part of creating a dangerous situation, you share the blame, even if you weren't the one who directly caused the harm.
Exactly. De Carvalho v. Brunner is like a foundational case that explores this whole idea.
Okay.
So let's set the scene, all right? April 25th, 1911.
Okay.
We're on Water Street in Lower Manhattan.
Gotcha.
A narrow, bustling lane, only about 20 feet wide.
Wow, really narrow.
Imagine pedestrians, vendors, horse-drawn carriages. It's a hive of activity.
So that sounds like a recipe for disaster,
Mm.
especially with two trucks racing through the mix.
And that's precisely what happened.
Oh no.
We have Brunner's one-horse truck
Okay.
and the E.J. Johnston Company's two-horse truck,
Okay.
both vying for the lead.
Wow.
Witnesses described their speed as being comparable to an ambulance rushing to an emergency.
So they were really flying down this crowded street.
Yeah.
Talk about a hazard waiting to happen. Like, what were they thinking?
It seems recklessness got the better of them. So
Yeah.
Brunner's truck, initially in the middle of the street, veers towards the east curb at Wall Street,
Okay.
while Johnston's truck, originally near the curb, shifts towards the middle of the street. It's in this chaotic scene that Luis de Cunha Carvalho is struck and killed by Brunner's truck while crossing the street.
Oh, that's so tragic.
Yeah.
But here's where the law gets really interesting.
Right.
The lawsuit argued that even though Johnston's truck didn't directly hit Carvalho, they were still partially responsible.
Right.
The reasoning being that by participating in the race, they contributed to a dangerous environment.
Precisely. It's like saying, hey, you helped create this reckless situation, so you share the blame, even if your truck wasn't the one that made contact.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
So, did the court buy this argument?
Initially, yes.
Okay.
The jury agreed and held both companies liable for the $10,000 in damages.
Okay, so justice served open and shut case.
Not quite.
Oh.
Johnston Co. appealed,
Okay.
and the appellate division actually threw out the case against them.
What?
Yeah, their argument was that there was no direct evidence that their truck caused the accident.
Yeah.
It's a bit like saying, well, my hand didn't push him, so I'm innocent.
Yeah.
But the Court of Appeals, New York's highest court, stepped in and essentially said, hold on, not so fast.
Oh, sounds like things are about to get really interesting.
They were.
Right.
The Court of Appeals argued that the appellate division missed a key legal principle: joint liability.
Okay.
They emphasized that the fact that Johnston's truck didn't physically hit Carvalho didn't automatically absolve them of responsibility.
So it's more about them being part of the problem than being the sole cause of the problem.
Exactly. Think of it this way. If you and a friend are playing a dangerous prank and someone gets hurt, even if you weren't the one who directly caused the injury,
Right.
you could still be held responsible because you were part of creating that dangerous situation.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So how does this idea of joint liability apply in De Carvalho v. Brunner?
Well, the Court of Appeals leaned on this legal doctrine called concerted action to make their point.
Concerted action.
Okay. Basically, it means that if people work together, even if it wasn't planned to create a risk, they can be held jointly liable for any harm that results.
So even if there wasn't a verbal agreement to race, the fact that both truck drivers were engaging in this reckless behavior was enough to establish a concerted action.
Yes, and to further clarify this principle, the Court of Appeals actually cited earlier cases about horse racing.
Horse racing. Interesting.
They brought up a case called Hanrahan v. Cochran, where two individuals were racing their horses on a public road. One of the horses veered off course and injured a bystander.
I'm guessing the court in that case didn't let the racers off the hook just because only one horse caused the injury.
You're right.
Okay.
They ruled both racers were liable.
Yeah.
It's like our truck case.
Right.
The focus isn't just on who directly caused the harm,
Right.
but on who contributed to creating a dangerous situation in the first place.
So it's about the bigger picture, the context in which the accident occurred,
Exactly.
rather than just the immediate actions that led to the collision.
Exactly. The Court of Appeals was essentially shifting the focus from a narrow view of who done it
Right.
to a broader understanding of shared responsibility when it came to dangerous activities.
Okay, so what happened to De Carvalho v. Brenner after the Court of Appeals weighed in?
That's a J.
You just declared Johnson Co. guilty?
Not quite. They sent the case back for a new trial.
Okay.
But with specific instructions for the jury.
Interesting.
They said the jury needed to figure out two things. First, whether the act of racing itself was a danger to pedestrians.
That too.
And second, whether the drivers were acting in concert, basically. Were they in on this reckless game together, even if they didn't explicitly plan it?
So they were saying to the jury, okay, we've laid out the legal framework.
Right.
Now you decide if the facts of the case fit within that framework.
Exactly. And this is where the standard of evidence comes in.
Okay.
The court clarified that the witness testimony about the truck's speed and how close they were to each other was enough to warrant a decision by the jury.
Gotcha.
It wasn't grounds to just dismiss the case outright.
So they were saying the jury had enough to go on to decide if the drivers were engaging in concerted action.
Precisely. And to illustrate this, we can look at a quote from the majority opinion written by Justice Cutabak.
Okay.
He said, where two or more are unlawfully or negligently racing horses on a street and one injures a traveler, they are jointly and severally liable.
So it wasn't just about the speed itself, but about the collective recklessness that stemmed from the act of racing.
Right. De Carvalho v. Brenner demonstrates that joint liability can extend beyond situations where everyone is directly contributing to the harm.
Right.
Sometimes creating a dangerous environment is enough to share in the blame.
That's pretty significant, and I'm guessing this case has implications that reach far beyond trucks racing in 1911 New York City.
You guessed right.
Okay.
We'll delve into those modern-day implications after.
Great. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah.
This is fascinating.
It is. So before the break, we were discussing how De Carvalho v. Brenner established that creating a dangerous environment can be enough to share in the blame.
Right.
Even if you didn't directly cause the harm.
Exactly.
This idea has some fascinating implications for how we think about responsibility, even in today's world.
It's like the court was saying, hey, you can't just focus on who pulled the trigger.
Right.
You need to look at who loaded the gun, who pointed it in the wrong direction, who set the whole dangerous scene in motion.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
And that's why this case is so important.
Okay.
It tells us to consider the bigger picture, the context surrounding a harmful event, not just the immediate actions involved.
So it's like a domino effect.
Okay.
You might only see the last domino fall, but it's those earlier dominoes that set the whole chain reaction in motion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
De Carvalho v. Brenner reminds us that liability isn't always a simple, straightforward thing.
Right.
When multiple people contribute to a dangerous situation, they can all share in the responsibility, even if their actions weren't the direct cause of the harm.
Okay, so let's say I'm a lawyer.
Okay.
Working on a case where multiple people might be responsible for an injury.
Okay.
What's the key takeaway from De Carvalho v. Brenner that I should keep in mind?
I'd say the most important point is the role of the jury.
Okay.
The court in De Carvalho v. Brenner made it clear that it's the jury's job to determine if the actions of the people involved were truly concerted and if those actions created a danger to others.
It's like the court was saying, hey, we've given you the legal framework. Now it's up to you, the jury, to look at the specifics of this case and decide if it fits.
That's right.
Yeah.
Imagine being a juror on De Carvalho v. Brenner.
Okay.
You've heard witnesses describe these trucks racing at crazy speeds down a packed street.
Yeah, you'd be thinking, these guys were totally reckless.
Right.
They were practically begging for an accident to happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It would be the jury's job to weigh all that evidence and decide if the drivers were acting in concert.
Okay.
Meaning, were they engaged in this reckless race together, even if they hadn't explicitly planned it out?
So the jury has to figure out if there was this unspoken agreement to race.
Yes.
Even if no one actually said, hey, let's have a dangerous truck race down this crowded street.
Yes. And to understand how concerted action works legally, the court in De Carvalho v. Brenner relied on a bunch of earlier legal cases, kind of like building blocks of legal reasoning.
Okay.
One example they used was Burnham v. Butler. In that case, two people were riding in a wagon.
Okay.
And one of them kept whipping the horse, causing it to bolt and crash into another wagon, injuring someone.
Hold on. We went from racing trucks to racing horses to a wild wagon ride.
Uh-huh. It does sound a bit all over the place, but it's all connected.
Okay.
Even though only one person was whipping the horse, the court decided that both people in the wagon were responsible for the injuries.
Okay.
Because the person who wasn't whipping the horse didn't do anything to stop it.
Oh.
They were essentially going along with the dangerous behavior.
Right.
It's like being the getaway driver in a bank robbery.
Right.
You might not be cracking the safe, but you're still a key part of the crime.
Wow. So even doing nothing can make you responsible if you're part of a dangerous situation.
Yeah.
That's pretty intense.
It is.
Yeah.
These cases show that being present and not objecting to a dangerous activity can be enough for you to be held liable for the consequences. It's like the law is saying you had a chance to speak up to do something and you didn't, so you share the blame.
So by upholding this idea of joint liability in DiCarvalho v. Brunner,
right,
the court was sending a pretty strong message about accountability for reckless behavior.
Right.
Like, if you're engaging in something dangerous, you can't just point fingers and hope to get away with it.
Right. You have to own up to your part in creating the danger, even if your actions weren't the sole cause of the harm.
Right.
And this idea goes way beyond speeding trucks and horse-drawn carriages.
Right.
DiCarvalho v. Brunner gives us a way to think about responsibility in all sorts of situations where actions have complicated and intertwined consequences.
So what kind of situations are we talking about here?
Oh.
Give me an example of how this 100-year-old case might apply in our modern world.
Well, think about the gig economy.
Okay.
Imagine two delivery drivers racing each other to meet deadlines.
Okay.
Weaving in and out of traffic, putting everyone around them at risk.
Yeah, that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
I see those delivery guys flying around all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If one of those drivers causes an accident, DiCarvalho v. Brunner makes us ask, what role did the other driver play in creating that dangerous situation?
Right.
Were they egging each other on?
Yeah.
Were they both driving recklessly?
So it's not just about who hit whom, but about the whole context of their reckless behavior, right?
Right. And we can even take it a step further.
Oh.
DiCarvalho v. Brunner might even lead us to ask, did the pressure from the delivery companies to meet tight deadlines contribute to this reckless driving?
Mm.
Did they create a system that incentivizes speed over safety?
Wow. So now we're not just talking about holding individual drivers accountable.
Right.
We're considering the responsibility of the companies, too.
That's the power of this case.
Yeah.
It's about understanding that harmful situations often involve a whole network of actors,
right,
from individuals to corporations,
yeah,
and everyone has a role to play in preventing harm.
DiCarvalho v. Brunner really does make you think about responsibility in a whole new light.
Yes.
It's not just about finding the one person to blame, but about acknowledging how different actions can come together to create dangerous outcomes.
Exactly. And that's a principle that's more relevant now than ever before, especially as we grapple with the ethical and legal challenges of new technologies and complex systems.
This has been super insightful.
Good.
I'm starting to see how a case from 1911 can still be a powerful tool for understanding how we assign blame and responsibility in our rapidly changing world.
Absolutely. And we'll explore even more of those modern day connections after.
Awesome. I can't wait.
Yeah.
We've been talking about this DiCarvalho v. Brunner, this 1911 case about two trucks racing down a busy street.
Right.
It seems like something from another era, but we've been uncovering how relevant it still is today.
It's amazing how a case about horse-drawn trucks can shed light on issues like the gig economy and even self-driving cars.
Okay, so let's go there, self-driving cars. How on earth does a 1911 truck race connect to autonomous vehicles?
Well, imagine a scenario where we've got two self-driving cars.
Okay.
Both programmed for like maximum speed and efficiency.
Okay.
Maybe they're navigating a crowded city.
Okay.
And they end up in a situation that resembles a high-speed chase.
So it's our truck race all over again.
Yeah.
But with robots at the wheel.
Exactly. Now, if an accident happens,
right,
who do we hold responsible?
That's a good question.
Yeah, the passengers, the programmers who designed the car's algorithms,
right,
the manufacturers.
It seems like there could be a lot of fingers pointing in different directions.
And this is where DiCarvalho v. Brunner gives us a framework for thinking about it.
Okay.
It reminds us to look beyond the immediate driver, which in this case is the autonomous system,
right,
and consider the entire chain of actors who might have contributed to the dangerous situation.
So we're thinking about who programmed the self-driving system,
right,
who set the safety protocols, who manufactured the car, and whether any of them prioritized speed over safety.
Precisely. It's about understanding the context in which the accident occurred, not just the immediate actions of the vehicles involved.
It's a whole new level of complexity when you're dealing with artificial intelligence and algorithms.
Absolutely. And that brings us back to this idea of concerted action.
Right.
Can we even apply that concept to algorithms? Can we say that a group of programmers, each working on different parts of a self-driving system, have engaged in a concerted action that creates a risk, even if they weren't directly communicating or planning it out?
It's like trying to figure out if lines of code can have a shared intention.
Right.
That's a wild legal puzzle.
It is, and it highlights how DiCarvalho v. Brenner is about so much more than just assigning blame.
Okay.
It's about helping us understand how responsibility can be spread out across a complex web of people and systems.
So it's not just about finding the one bad apple.
Right.
But about recognizing that harm can result from a combination of factors, some of which might be systemic.
Exactly. DiCarvalho v. Brenner gives us a legal framework for holding not only individuals accountable, but also corporations and even entire systems if they've contributed to creating a dangerous environment.
It's like the court is saying, we can't just look at who messed up at the very end.
Right.
We need to understand how the whole system might have set the stage for that mess.
That's a great way to put it. And this idea has implications for all sorts of modern issues, not just self-driving cars.
Right.
Think about data breaches, for example.
Okay.
It might not be one single person's fault, but a series of security lapses or poor decisions by multiple people within a company.
Right. Or a situation where a group of people online are cyberbullying someone.
Right. Yeah.
And their actions lead to that person harming themselves.
Right.
It's not one single message or comment that's the sole cause, but the collective impact of that online harassment.
Exactly. DiCarvalho v. Brenner provides a framework for thinking about how responsibility can be distributed even when it's difficult to pinpoint one single culprit.
This case really is more relevant than ever.
It is.
It forces us to grapple with the increasingly complex ways in which harm occurs in our interconnected world.
It encourages us to look beyond the immediate cause and effect and consider the wider systems and structures that might be contributing to harmful outcomes.
So DiCarvalho v. Brenner isn't just about some dusty old truck race.
No.
It's a call to think critically about responsibility, accountability, and the ways in which our actions can have ripple effects far beyond what we might immediately see.
Absolutely.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive into DiCarvalho v. Brenner.
It has.
I really appreciate your expertise.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's amazing how a case from over a century ago can still offer valuable insights into the challenges we face today.
It really is.
So to all our listeners out there, thank you so much for joining us. And until next time, keep exploring and keep questioning.